Any better?
Say
Any
something
better?
Pretty loud.
We the motherfucking house.
Yeah, that worked. Well, hello everybody out there in music video land, and welcome to another edition of This Week in Music Videos podcast, where we talk about, you guessed it, music videos. They come out every week. We've been trying to campaign for a week where they don't release music videos for several years, but hasn't happened yet. This podcast is brought to you by your super good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database. My name is Adam, and with me, as usual, as always, and someone who just took an Uber ride that I followed on the internet, which was fun and interesting, is Mr. Doug Klinger. How are you, Doug?
Doing super good, Adam. I'm not flawless, but I'm gorgeous.
Yeah. So last week you mentioned a line I didn't know where it's from. I know exactly where that's from. This is from Action Bronson's new album, Sincerely, Mr. Wonderful. And yeah, maybe we could talk about Action Bronson later. He released a music video, I think, last week. Before we get into the meat, we've got someone who is with us as usual, Mr. Adam Alexander from North of the Wall. Adam, how are you?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here. Ready to share some thoughts and some opinions.
Thoughts and opinions? Jesus, Adam. We never...
It's not why we bring you here.
No, wait. Hold on a second. You're totally mistaken about this podcast. We're just here reading ads from different products. This week's episode is brought to you by Squarespace.
Shit. I got no thoughts on that.
Squarespace.
We just lost it. Anyway, it was tenuous. They told us don't fuck it up, and we would have the
fucked it up. No, what works for MailChimp.
Yeah, actually, it's weird because almost like I have heard maybe hundreds of ad reads for Squarespace and Harry's and Fracture and all those companies that sponsor podcasts. But the only podcast I've ever heard sponsored by MailChimp is Serial. So I don't know what's going on there. But
well, and it's funny, too, because people are like, yeah, MailChimp sponsors a ton of podcasts. And I also have never heard them other than it's Serial.
Adam, have you heard a podcast sponsored by MailChimp ever?
No, just Serial.
Huh, interesting.
That's it.
So in the world of music videos this week, we've got a great watch list, much different from last week. Last week we had Andrea Allen on from Vimeo, which was a ton of fun. We had some crazy entertaining music videos that were more on the popish side. This week we've got a little more artsy, I think, but still a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. But we also have some news.
And weirdly pop.
Weirdly pop, yeah.
The best kind.
And we have a little bit of news to talk about this week, because this week, past week, was the YouTube Music Awards. Which,
YGMAs.
That's right. So if you have been paying attention to the YouTube Music Awards, you may remember the 2013 YouTube Music Awards, which...
14?
No, they were 13.
Oh, they skipped a year.
They did skip a year, I believe. Because if you look at the 2015 YouTube Music Awards Wikipedia entry, it says the 2013 ceremony was met with mixed reception.
Yeah, that's a kind way of saying that people thought it was shitty.
Yeah.
We liked it, though. We loved it.
Well, it was interesting. Remember, so who hosted it was Reggie Watts and who else?
Jason Schwartzman.
Yes. And it was
they did a terrible job.
It was in a...
I wanted to like it, but...
So bad. And it was, this is what's important. It was directed by Spike Jonze, and it featured like 7 music videos or something. One directed by Spike Jonze, one directed by Chris Milk, one directed by Syndrome. Like
live
music videos, but that then eventually were posted on YouTube.
Right. And it all took place. It was like an actual awards show, but like, you know, like we're doing it. Different take on it. Like it was
a
warehouse in Brooklyn, I think. And then we know the person who shot that.
Kevin Hayden was
he was a camera operator on it.
He shot a bunch of it. Like he did, I know he definitely did the whole like pre-show thing that they did, and I think he shot a couple of the live music videos. I don't know if he was on like the main on the main camera that was on Reggie and Jason, mm-hmm. or if he was more involved in like the individual projects where he operated camera. But he definitely was like a camera op, and I think he was a DP on a lot of it too.
So there were actual awards that year. Video of the Year, won by I Got a Boy by Girls' Generation, all sorts of different awards, and that was in November 2013. And November 2014, instead of like having an award show, YouTube just said like we gotta figure this shit out, and they said, you know, we're gonna kind of reinvent what this means, and we found out what it means this week, and that it means that they were releasing a number of music videos kind of branded with the YouTube Music Awards brand or logo, I guess, whatever you call it. And the interesting thing was that the sponsors stayed the same. I don't know if you guys remember, but Kia and right. Vice Media both sponsored the 2013 awards, and they both stayed on as sponsors this year.
Now, I do believe that there were awards. I saw somewhere that like 50 awards were given.
I did see a list, Doug. You're 50, right.
50 award recipients. What they received awards for or anything like that, I have not seen. But I have seen a long list of names of award recipients, including like Lady Gaga and a whole bunch of just like random names who I don't even think put out any videos this year. Unless Lady Gaga, like she did those ones with Tony Bennett.
Yeah, and I think we've all been enablers to the Tony Bennett Lady Gaga thing. I feel like it's our fault in a way, for kind of egging her on. And I always feel kind of
for anyone acting like it wasn't a terrible train wreck of an idea. If anyone who didn't meet that with like utter disgust and yeah. like have violent outbreaks mm-hmm. was an enabler.
So I used to edit like party videos and like bar mitzvah and wedding videos, and there was this one video that was like shot over like a 4-day weekend of like somebody's anniversary, and there are all these different parties and stuff like that, a very expensive large event, but there was this one couple that had like a choreographed dance that they like brought out at every party. So there were maybe like three or four of these events, like one was on a boat, one was, you know, in a ballroom, whatever, and they would always kind of bring it out, and the first time was like, oh cool, and then by the fourth time you're like, for the love of God, please no. And that like that pops into my head every time I see Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga, because every like awards like thing or like thing where they're like up next, you know, like blah blah blah, they list 15 awards to 15 artists, Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga are always in that list.
They're in the mix. Yeah. They're like, and of course, like last week in the last award show you saw. So wait, these and when these old people danced at these parties in South Florida, they were met with like much cheer and admiration at these like weird parties that they were at.
I think people were kind of had like a silent deference to them. There was no like, yay, we're doing it again. It was just more like, okay, well, here we go.
It's like, okay, this is happening. But there wasn't like a whoop, there it is moment where everybody is like into it.
So for this YouTube Music Awards, like we said, there was a whole like actual live broadcast in 2013. But this year they premiered 13 music videos. And so the weird thing to me was that the host was Tyler Oakley. And if you're not familiar with Tyler Oakley, he's like a YouTube slash Twitter slash Vine personality. And he like quote unquote hosted the event. They said he was going to provide like commentary, like pre-taped of course, on the music videos. And all that was going to be available on YouTube. And they also had 50 YouTube Music Award winners, which just sounds like an insane amount.
Yeah, that's what like 50. That's where Lady Gaga's in the mix on.
Yeah,
Lady Gaga's one of those random 50 awards, and they don't even say what the awards are. It's just like best hug, best shoes.
And it was kind of sad because when the 2013 when they did this awards, there was so much like energy, like we're gonna like. You know, YouTube is the venue for music videos, and we're gonna do an award show that's like mixes like video and music, and everything is gonna come together great.
We're not MTV.
Exactly, yeah, and I feel like it was a really valiant effort. And there are some parts of that show, like the Arcade Fire music video for Help me out.
It's the same one that the Emily Kai Bach eventually did the official video for.
Right, Afterlife.
Afterlife.
That live video was so great, and it's so much fun. And
even like the Eminem Syndrome one is like one of the best Eminem videos that I've seen in a while. Like, he's done so many actual music videos that like don't have that same natural energy mm-hmm. that was in that live music video that he did, because he kind of like pulled off something pretty impressive of being able to perform Rap God like live in that kind of context of like a verse that's like pretty kind of, it's like super fast or whatever, it's got a lot of words in it, and like, oh, those videos were all great. And so
yeah. the show is it was the segments in between the videos that where connected it,
right, where Jason Schwartzman and Reggie Watts are like digging through a cake for the award winner. It's like, who won the award? Dig through this cake. And then wasn't there a part where like where Schwartzman just had a baby for no reason? Do you remember that? He's just carrying around a baby. I'm pretty sure we live tweeted this when it happened.
We did. Yeah, we totally live tweeted it.
So not live tweeted it, live blogged it. Better.
Yeah, you remember that. I remember we live blogged it, I think, and we had we lived something. Yeah,
people we were there. In.
So this,
they took all that nonsense out.
Right. Well, I just kind of wish they gave it a second try.
Me too.
I mean, it's kind of a bummer to just like have the first one be. I mean, I guess you could call it possibly a failure, but like a super interesting. Interesting failure.
This is still a try, I think.
Yeah,
they commissioned all these videos. It's not like right. they just selected these videos. These videos were paid for by YouTube.
And do another show, but include these sweet commissioned videos. Just throw those in there. That's
the interesting thing is like that's not the thing they got wrong. Like the videos in the original show were the things the things that you could take away that were good.
Right.
And instead they just instead of like trying to fix the other part, they just threw it away. and then just commissioned these videos. But like in terms of the videos, I feel like they got it right again. Like in terms of the directors that they got for a lot of these videos, like they got some really great like names. Like it wasn't just big names. Like as much as I love Chris Milk and Spike Jonze, like I feel like those are such obvious choices, and they're also people who didn't necessarily like blow up on the internet. Like the directors that they chose for this time around, like kind of are internet people as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's not a shitty video out of the bunch. They're all good.
I will admittedly say I haven't watched them all. But I've watched a lion's share of them, and they've all been pretty solid. And yeah. they've been pretty popular as well. I think 9 of the top 10 videos from this week are going to be from the YouTube Awards,
which is impressive. Yeah, I think and Doug, when you mentioned like getting more internet people, I think that's kind of on both the artist and the director side. Like, I guess one of the ones that made a lot of I don't even know why I'm saying this. Made a lot of waves. What does it even mean? but one of the ones that I saw like in my Twitter feed a lot was this famous video by Charlie XCX directed by Eric Wareheim, who, you know, Eric Wareheim of Tim and Eric is definitely someone that we're super familiar with, and actually was one of the first like very complete pages on the site, I think, like several years ago.
I like point to Eric Wareheim's music videos as the reason that I started watching music videos again. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of like had let go of watching music videos for a while. Like there was like a dark ages, and then like I was a big Tim and Eric fan, and then Eric Wareheim just started making music videos, and I was like, oh fuck, music videos can be a thing, and I started paying attention. I remember like showing you the Pound of Floor video, Adam, like. Way back, like right after college, mm-hmm. and us both being like really stoked on it.
Well, actually, it's funny that "She's Got Me Dancing" by Tommy Sparks, directed by Eric Wareheim, is the third music video added to the database.
Nice.
So you can see where we kind of were.
Where our roots are.
Yeah, and like there's so many great like "Polite Dance Song" by The Bird and The Bee, "You Don't Know Me" by Ben Folds, and like videos like that.
He hasn't missed.
No. And this video is, so this video is for Charlie XCX, which we've talked on the podcast about a bit, because a lot of people have taken a stab at a Charlie XCX video. She has worked with a pretty amazing, like, breadth and depth of director, from Brother to Mark Glasfield to Sing J. Lee to Ryan Andrews.
Just, like, directors from all over the map, too.
Tons, yeah.
It's not like it's just been, like, all, like, people from one production company or, like, with one kind of style or visual palette. Like, people are, like, she's worked with directors who are all over the map.
This video is called Famous, and, well, the song's called Famous, and the video stars this, I guess, we're like, styled as a teen girl in her room who's dancing, and she's a big Charlie XCX fan. She's got posters all over her wall of her, and she's, you know, watching Charlie XCX on her iPhone or whatever, smartphone, and as the battery dies, like, these older kind of, like, counterculture goth people come out of the closet and out from under her bed to get her. And then she grabs her iPad, which has, you know, more battery, and then that dies, and they come and get her, and they kind of suck her into this underworld of these kind of people who are the stock and trade of, like, Tim and Eric Wareheim casting, like, these kind of, like, counterculture.
But they're in stylish clothes.
In stylish clothes. Like, all of them have, like, selfie sticks.
Modern stylish clothes, or, like, some kind of Tim and Eric variation of it. But they're all, like, very old, gross-looking people. okay. So, I, surprisingly, am going to say, because that's kind of like the video, right? Like, she, like, the girl's phone is not, like, her, what happens is her devices keep dying, and whenever her devices die, that's kind of when these people emerge. Mm-hmm. And then once everything kind of shuts down, that's when she goes into this place, and she's kind of in search for a plug, and she eventually, like, finds the plug as this, like, giant gross man with selfie sticks for all his fingers. The plug is, like, his belly button. So, and that's kind of like the video. And so I want to start by saying I love this video, and it's fantastic. It's one of the best videos that have come out so far this year. However, if I'm going to grade this on an Eric Wareheim music video, bell curve, it's not one of the best, in my opinion. And I feel like it just, like, so many of Eric Wareheim's videos just have, like, layer after layer after layer. Like, you can just keep peeling shit back on every Eric Wareheim video and keep coming up with more shit. And I don't think that this Famous video has quite so many of those layers. And I think that might be a result of the kind of scenario that they were in with having to make this video under these circumstances for this award show. I think that I read somewhere that they had, like, something like 10, 12 days to 2 weeks for, like, from conception to completion of this video. And I just feel like it's a video that's less layered than a lot of the Eric Wareheim videos that I've seen. And I wonder what you guys think about that.
Do we think that Charlie was filmed somewhere else? She wasn't on set with Eric?
On set with Eric or on set with, like, these other characters?
Well, I just feel like the decision to, for the concept for the video, to have Charlie on these tablet screens and phone screens had something to do with the fact that she couldn't be there where they were filming.
Who knows, right? Like, if they really had such, like, a short period of time. But, like, in terms of, like, that could make sense. I can't really say for sure, but she isn't really, like, fully integrated into the narrative of this story. That's true.
And she's never there. She's never there with the other characters in a room at any point.
Right. Right.
Right.
And I think this video kind of is another piece of a trend we've been seeing with Eric Wareheim videos lately, where there's been a little bit more social commentary to them. And that was never really a piece of anything. I mean, you watch, like, Wishes by Beach House, which is such an amazing video, or, like, Bubble Butt by Major Lazer. and Eric Wareheim's trademark has always been this kind of like sensory, you know, warping or warping of images that is like made Tim and Eric really famous for that kind of melding of that in comedy.
I do think though that they're, if you dig like super deep into any of the Tim and Eric aesthetic, that there is kind of like an overall kind of like
there's a
point being made.
Like there's always a theme or a message in there somewhere. Whether he's like really whether he's reverting gender stereotypes, or there's always something.
Yeah, or just like the fact that they use these like everyday people and mix them in with famous people, like. I do think that there is like a deep, deep, like kind of like core to everything. And I think that in these last few videos that, that he's kind of brought that up much higher. And
yeah, like the Ham by Mr. Oizo video, where it has those kind of trademark, like, you know, funhouse mirror kind of images. I don't even, why did I say funhouse mirror? It's a stupid way to describe it.
No, but I know what you mean. Like it is like a warping of reality.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the whole point of that video, or like the whole like subtext of that video, was consumer consumption and kind right. of parodying that. And this is, you know, obviously, you know, overconsumption or overuse of, you know, social media and other devices by certain generation. I mean, it's not very not very obfuscated here.
No,
or even paint. I guess it's also sort of the way the youth will paint a picture perfect image of themselves on social media, on Instagram, and it's not, you know, the reality of what's going on. That's kind of what I got.
I also think it's got some like youth preservation like trends in there too. The fact that these are old people dressed super young and stuff like that, like people trying to like be younger than they are and put up this front that they're like hip and with it when they're like weird old people, is also something that they're kind of being talked about here in this video. I love though the part where like the girl can't escape the room until she buys the Charlie XCX album. Like there's there's so, it's like buy my album. Like there's like a, there was like it, like I think from an idea perspective and like in like I feel like this video is spot on. And I just wonder, like, had they had more than 12 days, what you could do with like an Eric Wareheim director, you know what I mean? Like I feel like he's the type of director who I feel like does videos because he wants to work with the artist, and he kind of probably tries to pace things out the way he is comfortable with and doesn't have to work within the normal music video constraints. And I feel like for this video, maybe he did because of the nature of where the video came from. And because of that, I think it feels a little bit different to me. Like, I have no problem with this video. I love it a lot. But it just feels like it's got a few less layers than I'm used to in an Eric Wareheim video.
It definitely feels like it's coming from a different place. It definitely feels like there were limitations placed on this. And I don't know exactly how that's manifested, but like it doesn't feel like a... It feels like Eric Wareheim light in a way.
It's weird. I know. I hate to say, because we've used that, but it's weird. Like it does kind of have that, like that feeling a little bit. I don't know why. I don't know why. And my, like the only way... Like, knowing that it came as part of this big package where they're putting out 13 music videos in a day or whatever it is, and they were in a limited time crunch, like, it's hard to not speculate that that is why it has a different feeling to it. And maybe it's just because it's also a huge pop star. Like, that's something that's considered too. Because Eric Wareheim, you know, he's used to working with Diplo and Beach House and artists who aren't... Like, they're trying to do stuff with Charlie, right? Like, Charlie's
being... Yeah, I think you might be overestimating how popular Charlie XCX is, though.
No, I don't think that's
it's
what
pretty
I...
pretty big.
That's not where, like, this idea comes from. I just feel like this is a different type of artist than the one we're used to seeing for Eric Wareheim. And that's something else that could potentially come with just additional hands in the cookie jar. And...
Yeah, I guess if you're looking at some of his recent artists, or looking at like Mr. Oizo, Tobacco, Major Lazer, Dutch Boys, Beach House, you know, Charlie XCX is the name that jumps out of me out to me on that list in the last like 5 years or so.
So yeah, I can see that. Biggest yeah. artist that he's directed for, I think.
Yeah, although he did that the Youth video for MGMT when MGMT but that was super hot.
But that was also early MGMT. Like maybe he got on board at a different time, and that's also a video that he kind of helped mold what he was. Like he was a big TV guy at that time only, and it was like it's still kind of fresh to have Eric Wareheim as your music video director. Not to say that it's not anymore, but now he's very solidly a music video director. He's directed 17 music videos. At that time, he directed one. Like it was still like. Came with like additional cachet because nobody else had done it before.
I think it's a pretty safe statement to say that this video sits a little lower on the Eric Wareheim body of work, but fairly high on Charlie's list of videos. I would say.
Yeah, right. That's funny. Yeah, no, definitely. Probably sits up there, right up there with the brother one for me. But like, I don't know if I'm necessarily going to put it lower. On an Eric Wareheim scale, because like you're basically talking about 5-star videos across the board, this one included. What I would say is that it does just like have a different feeling than what I've come to expect in the Eric Wareheim videos.
So maybe we should talk about another video that came out of the YouTube Music Awards, and you can very helpfully tell that because the still image has a giant. Hashtag YTMA logo on it. Thank you, YouTube, for that. It's
very subtle.
Yeah. And that is the Glass and Patron. Patron. I never know how to say that word. It's a tequila, right? Fancy tequila, very expensive.
Yeah.
By FKA Twigs. I'm going to start this out by asking you guys a trivia question, and you have to answer without opening IMDb. But what over... close to 400 million view music video is FKA Twigs a backup dancer in from 2011. I'm going to give you an answer each, Doug.
I just looked. I'm not going to guess.
Adam Alexander.
Oh, man, that's I'm just going to say maybe a Beyonce video. No idea.
Sort of close. It's Price Tag by Jesse J featuring B.O.B.
Should have went with something in British. Yeah. That makes sense.
And this was submitted to the database by someone a few days ago. And I was like, FKA Twigs isn't in this video. And I watched it. And she totally is. She's a backup dancer. I don't know if you guys remember this.
You found her.
What's that?
You found her.
Well, this other person found her.
Well, what I mean is you watched the video and found her.
I went, whenever there's a kind of an important cameo, I definitely try to find the person. But you can definitely tell her, and she's never even that close to the camera. But she has such a distinct look that you can, like, sure. It's like the, it doesn't happen very often. But, like, I think the other famous example of that is Kesha being, you know, kind of an extra in the Katy Perry I Kissed a Girl video. She's just sort of like, if you've ever seen the video, it's just Katy Perry and maybe like a group of 6 girls, and she's one of the girls. So.
You mean Kesha. But, right.
Kesha's one of the girls.
So the other example, it's not a music video example, but
good.
The other example is Jennifer Lopez as one of the dancers on In Living Color.
The Fly Girl.
Fly Girl, right. Yes. With SW1, Sean Wayans. Sean Wayans was the DJ. His name was SW1. I don't know where the one came from.
Wait, are you but, really? He was the DJ in Living
Color. Yeah, before they would let him be before like Sean and Marlon Wayans were the Wayans brothers, and before he was an actor, he was the DJ, and he would just SW1 spin the hit, and then it would just be like in Living Color, and then they would just play the Heavy D song. But it was. If you Google Sean Wayans SW1, you'll see him with like a leather jacket sitting on some random balcony in the like in the set where the dancers dance.
This is pre White Chicks.
Way pre White Chicks. This is pre everything. This is like I said, before Marlon was even on the show, before he was like an actor on the show. And he was Sean Wayans, look it up.
So that was a good detour.
fun one. Before we come back around, no, this all relates directly to this FKA Twigs video.
So this FKA Twigs video is directed by FKA Twigs. I always like to remind people that FKA Twigs means formerly known as. Because sure. I think it kind of takes the mysterious element out of it. And this one's a weird one. This kind of features FKA Twigs in her, you see shots of a forest, then FKA Twigs is pregnant. She's reaching down to, this is interesting to describe. She's reaching down to her,
where you have a baby
genital
from.
Area, and then starts pulling out some like a clown pulling stuff out of their throat, pulls like all these colored fabrics.
She doesn't do it like a clown would, but this is what
it's, I don't it's know. Funny. I feel like she could have a feature at kids' birthday parties with this.
Come on, this is I think the video that I was most impressed by of the YouTube award videos.
Yeah,
it just surprised me so much. It takes such a turn, and. Mm. And then the turn that it takes is like, I'm just like in awe by the whole thing. Like, there's so much going on. I could never even picture what my life would be like being as cool as any of the motherfuckers in this video.
So at the end of this video, there's for people who haven't seen it, there's like a fashion show with a catwalk in the middle of a forest, featuring all sorts of interesting people. You know, I probably would not make the cut for this fashion show.
None of us are making the cuts. Now, but like, wait, hold on. But like, just in terms of like what is happening in this video, are we to assume that she like essentially gives birth to this? Because she like pulls all this stuff out of herself, and it's like all of these like, you know, like sheets and stuff, and then suddenly like these people kind of like appear from those sheets,
mm-hmm.
and then this shit happens. Like, she essentially like gives birth to a fashion show. If I have gotten my head around this fucking video, is. Like, properly. Like, maybe I'm off base, but that's what I perceived to happen. And, like, holy shit, what a fucking music video idea. Like, impossibly amazing music video idea. Gave birth to a fashion.
Are we gonna give FKA Twigs credit for self-directing? An artist self-directing a good video? We go in there?
I mean, FKA, it's not a new thing, though. It's not like she was a musician and then suddenly she's going to start directing. Like, she's clearly had, like, a heavy hand in all of her music videos. FKA Twigs is clearly someone who's not just a musician.
Mm.
So, yes, I will, with, like, a whole bunch of asterisks next to it.
yeah.
So many asterisks. Here's the weird thing, though. Because just to call back to last week when we had Andrea on the podcast, I was watching this music video at work, and little did I know that I was being filmed behind me, and there's just like a video of me, like my head, and on my screen is just an pregnant FKA Twigs pulling stuff out of herself. And
who are you being filmed by, like, Andrea?
Yeah, she caught me watching that way too publicly, apparently.
Yeah.
Watch yourself. This is definitely like a not suitable for work video, even if your work is watching videos.
Yeah. There's, so in this fashion show, there's all sorts of interesting stuff. But one of the things that I like the best is, I don't know, like maybe a late 30s white woman who has a kind of a pink skirt on. But the one thing she's wearing as a fashion accessory is what looks like a Girl Scout vest with tons of just like covered in pins, like covered in like what I would assume to be like merit badges or merit pins.
Yeah.
And I really want that to like become a thing, as like as a female fashion statement. If you are a female and you're listening to this, please help make that happen.
Well, pins are like coming in. I know.
Oh, really? Okay.
People are used to wearing a lot of pins, even boys. So look out for that. You can start working that into your thing. I think it's worth noting that FKA Twigs is also one of the three choreographers in this video.
Mm-hmm.
And the dancing is amazing. Like, it's so amazing.
And I think it should be noted that FKA Twigs, the reason that this is established, I have no idea why, but it is established that she's giving birth in a white van in the forest. Like, it doesn't seem like to be super important, like where she's giving birth, but it's very established very clearly that she's in the back of a van.
Yeah, like one of those like kind of tall, thin vans.
It's a nice van. I mean, it looks like a newer model van. and the other, so did anybody have flashbacks to the Nick Lady Gaga Born This Way video from this? There's a lot of parallels to this video, to the Lady Gaga video.
I didn't make the connection, but I'm not super familiar with the Gaga video.
So in the Lady Gaga video, she, like, the same name of the song was Born This Way, and there's all this, you know, Lady Gaga is pregnant in the very same posture that FKA Twigs is. And there actually is a lot of colored, I don't know what fabric this is, whatever fabric it is, this sheer fabric, a lot of colored fabric in these kind of tones. And the birth is, you know, it's very, very different. I'm not saying like anybody's copying each other.
Yeah. But, no, of course.
And I'm just saying that it's interesting because FKA Twigs up until this point has kind of been like, I think the best way to describe her is a bit of like a moon child. I mean, she's been very, she's like presented herself as this like kind of like aloof, like very feminine, but a very aloof artistic presence. And in this, she's like on a catwalk, like, working it. This is a very drastic turn for her, even if it is a little subtle.
Interesting. I forget. Okay.
I mean, don't you think that's true, that this is different for her? I was really struck by like how different this is.
She's always been on a pet, some sort of like, not a pedestal, but like kind of always kind of centered and like, I don't know. I didn't pick up on a lot of differences.
Yeah. But it feels like she's the same to me as well.
Now I remember what I was going to say before I trailed off like a drunk asshole. What other ways, like you say she's in the same position as Lady Gaga giving birth. Are there like other positions?
No, I'm just, so Lady Gaga, it plays kind of two roles in that video. One is this kind of, I guess, mythic, like, goddess creature that gives birth. Uh-huh. And it's a little more explicit. Like, she kind of gives birth to an egg in that video. It's done in a very different way, but it kind of follows the same pattern where there's a birth scene and then there's dancing.
Yeah, there's fashion, weird fashion. And exactly, it's pop. And it's colorful. I see similarities for sure.
And you know, it's just, you know, artists like to play with different kind of subjects, and the idea of like fertility and birth is always an interesting one to play with. But FKA Twigs kind of hasn't really played with that much. I mean, she's always like walked a really fine line between sexualizing herself and being kind of too weird to conventionally be sexualized. And in this, she I feel like she crosses that line a little bit, especially when she's like, you know, dancing on this catwalk. I mean, there are some scenes where like it could be like a Madonna video, you know, from 15 years ago.
Right.
It just, whereas, you know, I couldn't see Madonna, you know, jumping around, you know, execution chamber, for instance, like she did.
As much as like Madonna would love to be able to push those buttons that get pushed.
Yeah, she doesn't do that anymore.
Like, I feel like FKA Twigs, to me, it just feels a lot more genuine, though. Mm-hmm. And it just seems to come from a different place. I don't know. Maybe I'm just like jaded by Madonna and I'm not really like conscious of what Madonna like actually was before she's become like this parody of herself. And like maybe Madonna was FKA Twigs in like the 80s or whatever. But like my perception of Madonna now is just become like a Jerry Seinfeld of herself. And she's like just a joke. Like, you know, just like a shell, and everyone is just like still remembering what they loved in the past. Like hasn't let go. And like she's not let go of herself either. And but like FKA Twigs to me, it just seems like everything she does seems so natural to me. I don't know. Like none of it as far, like whatever direction, as far off in whatever direction as she wants to go, like it still seems, nothing is seems forced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel you. And I mean, she ranks high on like a scorecard for like everything, the music, the styling, the dancing, the visuals that accompany her music. It's like a perfect score all the way across.
It puts all that stuff together
here. It's like, you know, when you dive and there's like a table of four or five people there, who, and then they hold up the numbers. you know, tens all across.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Except Russian. Madonna's there. She's got a zero.
Yeah. Madonna's like, fuck you. And it's weird. Like when I first saw an FK Twigs video a few years ago, I would have never made the Madonna comparison. But I think that the music and I don't think there's like space enough for a figure like as pervasive and as popular as Madonna. I think people used to say that about the Beatles, that music and genres were too fractured to have another Beatles. And I think that was true, just starting to become true maybe 10 years ago. And now we're at the Madonna point. We just keep going down. So what's our next stop? Should we stop at Run the Jewels next?
Well, should we stick with... I think we should run out the YouTube Music Awards.
Okay.
For first. So let's talk about the Saman video.
Kygo, I think is how you say it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Stole the Show featuring Parson James. Saman is someone we've had on this podcast who has directed some videos that you definitely have heard us talk about if you've been listening to this podcast, including Never Say Never by Basement Jacks. That's the one with the robot butt twerking. as well as Stamina by Vitalik and tons of other great videos.
Cinnamon Chasers Love Deluxe.
Yeah, that's definitely a famous one.
That he's and the to. Placebo ones that have been coming, that are pretty recent too. We really love those.
Yeah, those are great.
And this video is, it starts with these kind of reports of, news reports. I can't remember what they say, but the idea is that something has happened and some person has landed on the planet and people are looking for him, and out walks this kind of person who looks like they're in a space costume, you know, all white with a helmet on. And then they happen to walk into a Halloween party who, of course, in like classic like misunderstanding comedy style, everybody's like, oh, you're here for the party, you know.
Right, who's that?
Yeah, who's that guy? It's a great costume. I think there's some movie from the 80s that does exactly that, I think. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I don't remember. It feels like that type of like 80s or like sitcom scenario.
Yeah, like was it like Ghostbusters or something? I don't know.
Right.
Anyway, it's one of your classic house parties with a bunch of burnouts, you know, fucking each other or whatever. And then
dickheads, bunch of dickheads.
Yeah, bunch of dickheads. But anyway, the music starts, and this turns out this being or this person in the spacesuit can really dance, can really cut a rug, as they say.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes a turn where the female version jumps in out of the, but the first guy just walked into the party.
Emerges later, right? She's like a big deal when she gets there.
Yeah, like the first person just kind of walked in. And was like, well, what's going on here? The second person like dances in,
yeah,
like it not even just like starts dancing, like they've been dancing like 100 feet out kind of deal, and then they start dancing with the other space person, and they kind of like
have it a moment. Saves the day.
Yeah, saves the day. And then at the end, we get the government, you know, because they're always ruining things. I think these are the Obamacare agents. they come in and
they handle you. Yeah. Another great thing that I love about this video is the masks have like this I don't know, what would you call it? Like it's not a projection because it's actually
an LED
display. The masks are like LED display, and I feel like that's a callback I'm trying to think of what Saman video Song of Loss Apparat video.
That's right, yeah, from 2011.
Yeah, it's also got this like this kind of like like a computer screen that kind of has life, and it reminded me of that as well. It was a very Saman like feeling moment to me.
Yeah, this video has a really, it's funny. There's all these different qualities that different directors have, that I guess if you watch too much music videos, we can kind of pick them out. And even though you know they're maybe totally different subject matters, just the way they treat it, and like as soon as I saw this the video started, I was like, oh yes, this is definitely like has a Saman Kesh touch to it, which is great. I love this video.
Yeah. Saman's doing a whole bunch of things, but like I still get really stoked when he comes out with a video, because they're always like, they always have a lot of stuff to like grab onto and really love. Like this, I love the dancing in this video. I love kind of like the love story that exists in this video. Like we talked about, like the masks is a lot of like a fun element to be drawn to, and then like the big kind of like epic ending is also like really great and like. And
yeah, we shouldn't give away the ending. They don't just get surrounded. They, whatever. Well, you go.
We'll just watch it.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We won't tell you what it is. But it's great.
But so one of the things that I really love about directors like Saman is they really understand. I think like music video directors can sometimes be grouped in like two groups, like people who understand what to do with the medium and people who don't, and people who try to kind of encompass too many things or encompass too little things. And Saman is one of those directors that understands exactly like where to draw the parameter lines, what to tell and what to leave out. Right. And music videos are one of those great mediums where you can leave out a ton and still tell a compelling story. So this is like a really kind of like compelling little vignette. It's like it's a relatively long video. It's like 5 minutes, 30 seconds. But he leaves you so much room to fill in backstory here.
Without like taking too much away where like it doesn't make enough sense.
Right.
Like it's still got like this kind of skeleton where like when the things happen, like it kind of like helps you kind of like put things together in your head that you were kind of building on your own already.
Right.
Like it's not immediately clear that like even the sex of these two things, but then like of these two characters, and then you kind of like can tell, like it becomes clear and like the story begins to materialize like as it goes on. He's kind of like giving you those pieces.
Yeah, the second one has boobs though, you gotta admit.
Well, right, but you're not like immediately looking for that. Like as soon as a character enters frame that you don't see their face, it's like, oh no, face, where are the boobs? Where are the boobs? Let me check in. Check on the boobs. Boobs check. I don't think that's at least not my gut, like immediate reaction. I kind of let the story fill it in. But then, yes, I also noticed eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it wasn't the boobs that gave it away for me, but it was the dancing. The dancing was definitely some girl moves.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I did recognize that. It was the I don't know what it was about it, but there were definitely moves were more feminine, yeah.
Yeah. Like mine are like that.
So if you go to the show notes of this, imvdb.com/podcast, we're including a 30-second, very grainy clip of Adam Alexander dancing.
They exist. They're out there.
Yeah. You can download it.
It's very grainy. He's wearing swimmies, you know, like those things on your arm that you give little kids to help them float. He's wearing swimmies and flippers and getting down.
I've got a shirtless one of me dancing to Hot Chip on YouTube somewhere. It's true. It's out there.
And all of those are Creative Commons, so Drew, do it.
Right, use them as you will, right. Yeah. And they're in front of a green screen, which is great. So let's... I think we can move on from the YouTube Awards now.
Thank you, YouTube Awards.
Next whoa. Wait.
There's so many great...
But I do want to quickly talk about one more from the YouTube Awards.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, hold on. Well, there are so many great ones. It's so hard to leave them out. But what's the one? Like, because I really liked a lot of them. But what's the
I just want to real quick, because it was on your watch list. Okay. And it's probably one of the strongest examples of a great video for a song that I fucking hated. And it's the Gibberish video by Max, directed by Greg Jardin. I loved this video. It was like so great.
Yeah, I forgot this was a YouTube Music Awards video.
It's so great. Greg Jardin's also been on this podcast. He's a homie.
Like he did an awesome job at making like I just don't like this song, but he did like a cool visual for this, and it almost made me like the song because the video was just so cool.
The video is great, and it's also like Greg Jardin is. Someone who, they're not like, I wouldn't call them gimmicks, but they're like ideas that you can kind of bottle into a sentence a lot of times. And,
well, the good example of that is in, maybe 2010, 2011, he did the famous video for Kina Granis, In Your Arms, which was done with stop motion, and I with jelly beans.
Right, it was a jelly bean stop motion
video. And he was in, which led to Kina Grannis to kind of awkwardly play the song on Ellen while the music video played in the background. This was early days of the music video resurgence.
Oh, it's so bad.
It was
this awkward. Is early days of the music video. We had Greg on and talked about that, I think.
Yeah, maybe yeah, 2011. Yeah, a while ago.
Did we say it was, we didn't say it was bad when we had him on. We talked about the video. Did we talk about Ellen when we had him on?
I don't think that would happen yet, honestly.
I just listened to that one, so it's kind of fresh in my memory. I think you did talk about Ellen.
Man. I mean, it was a great... I'm glad that it happened and that Ellen was, like, recognizing a music video at that time. And the music video is fantastic, and obviously, like, Greg Jarman is a fantastic director, but the performance of her performing in front of the video did not work for me.
Yeah. I think the clearest example is that I don't think that's happened again afterwards. So this gibberish video, like he said, he kind of latches on to a visual trick, I guess, and incorporates that into the video in an interesting way. And this one is one of the – something that was super compelling. And that is this guy Max, I guess. I've never heard of this guy Max. Seems like a nice dude. Is dancing and singing in this kind of the floor of a building with white columns. And it's apparent that some things are in backwards motion, but not everything is in backwards motion. And it's never, there's never like any sort of repeating pattern of this. It's just
it's
some things
clear.
Are backwards, some things are regular motion. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it makes for like,
I think
surprising
he's
stuff.
Always, sorry, Doug.
Sorry, no problem.
I was just going to say, I think he's always played forward. He doesn't get reversed at all, but everyone else is kind of back and forth.
Right,
you're
and
right,
it's also
yeah.
It also appears to be one shot the whole time.
Yeah, right. I didn't see any cut points not that I have an eye for cut points, but like,
no, but I mean it feels like this was probably motion control,
mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's how they did a lot of this stuff. So, like, there might not be cut points, but these people probably aren't necessarily in a room together.
Yeah, I did have that feeling like different. Kind of shots coming together in that way, but yeah, there's definitely moments where people are walking around with smoke machines, and some of them the smoke is coming out and some of the smoke is coming back in, and then there's stuff projected on the smoke machines. It's definitely like a very technical sleight of hand video, which obviously is something that Greg Jardin does extremely well.
And another thing that like really helps like add to some of the disorientation is that there are lines in this song that are run backwards.
Right.
Which allows the people on frame to say that stuff forward, and then they run that stuff backwards. So they're still, like, synced with that portion of the song, but they're doing things that are backwards. Like, it's just so much, like there's a lot going on.
It hurts your brain to try to think about what they're actually filming, too, if you really sit there and try to think.
Yeah, it's better to just sometimes. Let it all happen and enjoy the grooves.
Yeah, I don't want to think too much.
No.
I just want a cool music video, Greg.
Fucking Greg. No.
The Jelly Bean one, I actually haven't seen that in a long time. And after this podcast, I'm going to go watch it. Because I remember him talking about that and it being like a trip. Like this. And Kina Grannis has done relatively well for herself, I think.
Yeah, totally. But it's insane what they went through. Like, to hear about that process, it just seemed insane. Because literally, it is just what you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking switching out those jelly beans every time. And, like, there was a lot, like, with projection that helped them do it. And, like, a lot of, like, things that, you know, just, like, made the process work. But for the most part, like, they had to just empty and replace jelly beans a bunch of times.
Yeah.
So,
good one, Adam. I forgot about that. That was YouTube Music of Video Awards, and
yeah, you whoa'd us, and
Who's Hoodie out?
You don't know Hoodie?
Is he opening for Kendrick on his tour?
No.
Why not?
Why aren't you?
No,
Adam?
Seriously. Is Hoodie Allen like a Mac Miller kind of a dude?
He's a rapper. I don't think he's a Mac Miller kind of a guy. I do think I saw Hoodie Allen and Riff Raff had beef. So I would be on Team Riff Raff
Me
if that
too.
was the case. If that
I
was the
wish
case.
Riff Raff was in this video.
I can't
Cool.
confirm. I can't confirm. Someone should Google that before they ask Hoodie Allen what the fuck. But
Riff Raff is an untapped feature artist. I just feel like if I was any artist out there that was famous, I would have Riff Raff as a feature. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't.
Just do it. Right. I did see that people are putting Annie Milonakis in their songs now.
Yeah, I see him popping up too a little bit.
Like, just get Riff Raff. He's obviously, like, he's not going to do a ton of, like, okay, like, Neon Icon was an all right album, but I think it proved that Riff Raff is not, like,
an
going
album,
to be selling out, you know, the arenas anytime soon.
Well, I feel like he's more of a live act. Like, people would maybe not, like, people might be like, well, I'm not going to buy the Riff Raff album and listen to it in my car, but, like, I would go to a show and see what he's all about there.
Do people go to rap?
He sells out shows for sure, and he tours.
I still am of the, and I have seen very, very little to dissuade me from this, that rap is just not alive. Like, alive in the conventional sense of, like, selling a ton of tickets. Like, Lil Wayne just had a complete shit show in Fort Lauderdale for coming
on
at 3 in the morning.
He's a terrible performer. He comes from a time when that was what rap shows were. There are artists who do new things now, and there are even the artists who do just, like, regular rap shows are still capable of, like, tapping into an energy. Lil Wayne is just, like, not a good live performer. He's way too, like, high to, like, keep an energy up. He probably, like, doesn't know his lyrics well enough to, like, really carry a show and do something interesting with it live. But, like, there is a way to have a good live rap show. I've been to plenty of them.
You just have to look to bands like, or acts like Run the Jewels or any Odd Future stuff. Like,
Kendrick Lamar is great live. Even somebody like Action Bronson, I feel like, can do some things. Like, it might run out of gas, but, like, can be a fun entertainer. I don't think there's anything entertaining about seeing Lil Wayne live. He's not like a character like that where you can look at them and still enjoy them, even if you can't hear what they're saying. But there are acts who
Danny Brown comes to mind.
Want you to hear
too.
What they're saying. Kendrick Lamar is a great live performer. And you can hear what he's saying, and he's got an energy to carry it. But I do get your point, Adam, that without, like, a full live band, there's less to appreciate.
You know what I learned recently that was, this is kind of, I don't know what will remind me of this, but there was did you know Mark Ronson has done a TED Talk?
No.
Yeah, he did a TED Talk of all things, the 1985 rap song La Di Da Di. Have you guys heard this song? By Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick.
I know the song. Sorry, I was blowing my nose.
Okay, yeah.
But I know the song. Yes, sorry.
I was just, and if anybody listens to the TED Talk podcast, I think it's called, where they go in depth on, like, TED Talks a little bit more in depth. They had Mark Ronson on and talked about this, and his whole TED Talk was about this song and how it has been, like, sampled and referenced over and over again, like, in places you wouldn't even expect. Like, when Miley Cyrus says, like, la di da di, we like to party, I think most people would hear that and be like, okay, well, she's just singing some gibberish or nonsense, but it's a reference to the song La Di Da Di. And little snippets of it have, like, appeared, you know, basically, you know, all over the place.
It's not uncommon for, like, rap to just, like, put, like, start verses in one way, and, like, you know, like, you hear, like the same kind of punchlines and, like, making references to, like, rappers from before and, like, carrying stuff forward. Like, Jay-Z uses Biggie lines all the time, you know, to, like, kind of just, like, give him love. And so that's, like, part of it. It's interesting that it's now moved out of hip hop, but, like, Miley's pulling from that jar.
But it's interesting that, like, and one, the thing that reminded me is, like, Mark Ronson talks about how that aspect of hip-hop has been used to disparage hip-hop. Like, that's not something that happens in rock or other genres a lot, where people are just basically, like, just lifting wholesale elements out of other songs and using them in their songs. And I think that's something that rap, like, definitely dealt with really heavily in the 90s and the 2000s, a lot of criticism for stuff like that, and has, I think, now, like, completely moved out of. I don't think that's a valid criticism anymore. I don't think that's a criticism anybody is interested in, but I do think, like, even though there are rap artists that are out there doing that, I think the next, like, big hurt, like, doing great live shows, doing great live performances, I think the next hurdle for them isn't the people's aversion to having samples so heavily in music, or even the idea of rap in general, but having something that is just so different live than it is in a recorded form. I think it's just something that, I mean, it's going to take a long time. It's going to take maybe another decade or so, but I think
it definitely takes them. It takes a hip hop artist to do more to make their song translate live than it would be for, like, a rock band. And a lot of, like, forever, rappers didn't really take that consideration. And some of them could still put on a good show because they were really energetic or just, like, a good live performer. Like, for a while, Eminem, for example, was, like, just entertaining to watch for 2 hours. Even if you didn't know what he was saying, or couldn't really comprehend, like, you could get the beat and you knew the song already, and he would be fun live because you, like, he's fun to look at no matter what he's doing. But I feel like there's always been hip-hop artists, Outkast and others, who have always tried to take consideration to put on a good live show and, you know, still try to, like, make it translate their music to live performance. I don't think that Lil Wayne is really doing that. I think that he just has a DJ put on the beat and raps it in front of people instead of, you know, in a studio. He doesn't do an addition. He doesn't make another step.
I read something that he recently snapped on his DJ for playing the wrong Coco sample. Threw his mic at him and stormed off.
DJ's name?
I don't know. But that's a good live performance. That I want to see.
Dude, that happens all the time, though. Who's the DJ playing the wrong shit?
Who's Kanye West's DJ?
Have you seen that?
Have you seen the supercut of all Kanye West yelling at his DJ?
Yes, it's so good, especially for Kanye, because his shows are, like, supposed to be very, like, put together and elaborate, and so to fuck up in those cases, it really, like, takes you out of the moment. But the thing, like, Kanye is trying to create moments in his live performances, but that supercut, we have to link that in the show notes.
It's Mano.
Mano.
Oh, my God. It's just like, and he doesn't, like, kind of get mad at him. He's like, Mano!
I want to see this. You gotta like it.
And it'd be, like, completely pitch black, and, like, you can't, and it'd just be, like, the wrong beat for a second, and then the wrong beat for a second, and it's just him yelling. It's so good.
So should we talk about our friends Run the Jewels?
Yeah, let's talk about our sweet boys.
So Run the Jewels have been kind of coasting through some of our favorite directors. They did...
Yeah, just picking them off.
A video with Timothy Cicenti for the last album, Run the Jewels 2. I started with Oh My Darling, Don't Cry, directed by Timothy Cicenti. Lie, Cheat, Steal, directed by Rough Mercy. And then now we have Mr. A.G. Rojas, who's been on this video. This podcast, with Close Your Eyes and Count to Fuck.
Featuring Zach De La Rocha.
Zach De La Rocha, right. Who has a great, one of my favorite featured verses.
Such a great
long feature.
Time. Yeah, that's awesome.
Something it's that just, like, good. Adds so much to this song.
It does an additional layer. What did you guys think of this video?
So we should describe this video a little bit first, because it's a simple description. So it's starts with Run the like LP and Killer Mike.
And kind
of, Zach DeLaRosa. Right. We're kind of walking around a neighborhood, but then it cuts to this dude. I believe it's Shay Whigham. And
who... Yeah, these two guys. Shay Whigham is the.
It's a police officer. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And then the other guy that who plays a black guy is Keith Stanfield.
And Keith Stanfield is the guy who was in that Carmela Michaela. Gary Clark Jr. music video.
That's right. Yeah, I knew him from somewhere. Okay,
and he's also like an actor from movies. Right. And the guy Shay Whigham is also on Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, that's so, thank you.
I knew. Yeah, so Silver Linings Playbook, American Hustle, Wolf of Wall Street. He's a big boy.
And so this video is like obviously, and we talked about this in the podcast before, like police, kind of handling of or the conduct with minorities is a huge topic in the U.S. if you're listening from another country, starting with the killing in Ferguson and in New York with Eric Garner. And this video, like a lot of videos have kind of touched on this and it's kind of seeped into the culture this way. And this video, it has a really interesting take on it. You know, these two characters, as we mentioned, played by Shay Whigham and Keith Stanfield, play a cop and, young-ish black guy in a white t-shirt in kind of like a sort of rundown neighborhood. But they're basically...
I would say this is a very authentically low-income neighborhood.
Yeah. When you think of like a West Coast kind of quote-unquote ghetto area, it's probably
weird. Yeah, this is not like they didn't this does not seem faked.
No,
these locations.
And you know, basically what they're doing is like fighting each other and not like boxing or like, you know,
or like fake movie fighting. Even they're like it's wrestling at some points,
right?
And it's like very like their fighting is very raw to me. It's just like very like just like trying to like just get in there with the person. Like it's very like one-on-one, like face-to-face, like roll around kind of fighting, like the type of fighting where like if you and your dad got into an argument, you know what I mean, though, like the type of like you're not gonna punch your dad, but you're like, fuck, dad, like,
yeah,
shut up, I want to go.
Yeah, like one point they're like kind of locked at each other, but like they both have their hands in each other's faces, kind of, and yeah. But with like open palms, like not like trying to like gouge their eyes out. It's really tough to describe what this fight is, but obviously this is the main action for the entire video. So it's very obvious that, you know, A.G. Rojas and the actors in this video spent a lot of time figuring out exactly what this action was going to be, and it goes on for the, you know, the time is accelerated in this video, so you're not looking at this in real time. It's a 3-minute video, but you start in the daylight and it ends in the nighttime.
Yeah, and it kind of like jumps around. It's black and white the whole time,
right?
And then shot by Michael Reagan.
There's the interesting milk scene. That's
the milk scene is so here's the thing. Here's what's great about this video is that it keeps taking these turns, and the milk scene is like really one of like the big key turns for me, where like your opinion of the characters kind of like shifts throughout the video. Because like when it first starts, you just like assume, okay, cop's gonna probably be the bad guy in this scenario, just based on what's been going on. Like you assume that like the cop's gonna try to kill this kid, but like at no point do you really like this. Is that actually like the case in the video? And like the advantage kind of shifts between the two of the characters throughout the video. And then when the milk scene hits, they kind of share it to a weird level. Like, yeah.
So describe the milk scene for us.
Okay. So they kind of like, they're like fighting in the street all over the place. And then suddenly they kind of like stumble into this house, and the kid gets to the milk first, because all right. First of all, when they're fighting, the cop's pepper spray goes off and kind of gets in both of their eyes. So they stumble into this house and just break into the, like essentially, into like bust into the fridge and just start pouring. First, the kid starts pouring milk on his face to like relieve the pain, and then like the cop comes in and kind of like takes the milk from him. And it's at that point, it's like not really aggressive between the two of them. Like they both have begun. Like their main goal has been the milk on their face, like relieving their pain. They're more of like in it together at that point, just for that like kind of moment of the milk moment, because then they get into it again.
And I think it's also kind of crucial that you never see like the impetus of this conflict. There's never like you know Eiji Rojas, to his credit, never avoids a lot of like kind of preachy pitfalls and callbacks to really obvious callbacks to other things.
But also, it has callbacks to everything because every one of these stories, like, there are people on both sides of it, right? And there are people who, like, you don't know necessarily the incident, and you only know, like, the outcomes, and you only know what happens when they're wrestling, and from that point on, and everything else becomes so cloudy. So, like, this video starts, and the cop's nose is bloody, and they're already out of breath, and they've already been fighting. You know, it's already started. Because that's like, if you're gonna look deeper, like, in these situations, when a new one of these situations arises, it comes from a situation where these types of people are already fighting with each other. Like, it starts at no place, but it also starts where everything is. And it's just like so fake, and it's rooted in what Run the Jewels is all about. Like Killer Mike, during Ferguson, like during the Michael Brown, like just after that incident, was on a lot of news, like was on CNN and Fox News, talking to all sorts of people and kind of like empathizing with both sides. Killer Mike has, I think his dad was a police officer, I think his sister's a police officer, he has law enforcement in his family, like he gets the argument, like he gets both, he has perspective on both sides. And this video at no point takes a side. And it's just so fantastic how they're kind of like able to do that. I feel like it's such an impossible task that they kind of like take on, and they nail it. They nail it.
I love the ending where they're just both sitting on one side of the same bed in what looks like a grandmother's bedroom. And it's just like a really cool moment. They're both like exhausted and they're worn out and they're beaten and they just give up. I
And
love
that
it.
could be like, what do you guys think that means? Do you think that means that, like, that's their way of them saying like they're the same person, they get into the same bed at like the same type of bed at night? Or like, can you look at it like they're
Sure.
some kind of like married couple, and like you can like take the this conflict that goes on between, minority and low income communities and law enforcement as like the type of conflict that goes on within a married couple as well, where there's like similarities between the struggle, but also like individual, like, I don't know.
Doug,
There's
I
like
think with that comment, you just earned yourself an honorary film degree. I think you just wrote a film thesis. I think we just had a film thesis happen.
I did.
That is kind of weird, like the choice of that.
I feel like it's, I mean, it could mean, I mean, obviously we don't necessarily need to nail down what it means, but I think that like it could kind of be like, what did you guys think of that though? Where did you kind of land on that?
That didn't really cross my mind. It seemed like just like a good place for them to end up. I mean, if it, did they when they went into the house, I'm not sure too much. I don't know if too much thought went into that because they just kind of go into this domestic area. There's a director statement. If you go to just Run the Jewels, which is interesting, if like just go to runthejewels.com or .net or whatever.
Done that, and there's like two paragraphs from a director of their music video. That's pretty uncommon.
From AG, and I actually didn't fully get through this, and it, he, but I did read that the AG wanted to quote translate, the song into a film that would ignite a valuable and productive conversation about racially motivated violence in this country, and the reason I didn't kind of read this, and a reason I don't really think that commentary from the director is super necessary in this is that AG, I know AG's trying to like the intent is to start a conversation, but I think that's something that's happening in a million different places, you know, in every different piece of art across the country right now. I feel like that's just such like a target of popular culture and popular discourse right now. And I feel like AG's take is so unique and so valuable that I don't really think it needs to be said that he's going towards that.
Or no, that, I think that you're absolutely right.
His target. I feel like this stands alone. I don't really feel like a commentary is necessary on this, because if you sit somebody down and watch this, you immediately get it, and it's powerful in its simplicity.
No, totally. I completely agree. I don't. I mean, I appreciate that Run the Jewels gave AG the opportunity to like kind of speak. To like provide this and put this out there, like that they cared enough about it. But like, I agree that it should stand on its own. But I also know that AG seems like someone who's really passionate and has like a lot to say about his work. But I agree that like the work is saying it without mm-hmm. without the words themselves being there.
Talking about the rating system? Or do you have another video you want to talk about?
Well, I really like the Isaac's video.
That's right. How do you say it? Hosier?
We argue about this every time. I have no idea how to say his name.
So, this is called Work Song by Hosier, directed by Isaac Ravishankara. Been on this podcast. Friend of the site, I would say, probably.
I would say.
Isaac, if you don't like our site, you know, just, you know, let us know. And obviously Hosier is a guy who had a really
big song,
big hit. There was a thinly veiled metaphor for sex. Take Me to Church. And this is his, you know, another single. And in it, he's kind of singing to a, you know, he's at a concert, small concert. And this guy, have you guys noticed a trend of dudes wearing their hair in buns?
That's the whole thing. That's the man bun. There's tumblers for that shit.
Yeah, man. I've seen the tumblers. And just like a few weeks ago, and I was like, I didn't even know this is a thing. And ladies swoon over this.
I'm growing one right now.
You're growing it out. Are you actually doing it?
I can. I'll try it. Maybe. No,
who
I can't.
Would be the best of the three of us? Of the three of us, who could pull it off?
Oh, you. So, Doug, I think you could do it. My hair is very thick. It's too thick for a bun.
My hair's kind of too short right now, but I feel like I could grow it out. I feel like I would be willing to grow my hair out mm-hmm. for the purposes of just seeing if I could pull off a top bun.
Yeah, I agree.
And then if I can, keep it. Uh-huh. And if I can't, cut it and donate it. Mm. To like someone who's making like oil, you know, like you could suck up oil with hair, so
like an oil spill cleanup effort.
Yeah, okay. Donate my hair to that. Not to like, I mean, yeah, maybe cancer or something. Yeah, but no, I'm thinking oil spills.
So at this concert, it's a nice, it's an interesting kind of video. Sorry, so the video features Hosier, the guy from Hosier.
Who is Hosier.
Adam, where is he from again? You know this.
Irish.
He's Ireland.
Right, okay.
And Irish, I say.
And some couples in the audience kind of break out into a choreographed dance. Very nice dance. Shot really well. And again, one of those things where if you watch enough Isaac Ravishankara videos, there's just like little stylistic touches that I think are definitely Isaac touches.
Right, totally.
Especially the way this is shot, because...
Shot by Kevin Phillips, who's also on this podcast.
Exactly. Because didn't Isaac do the video for...
Riff Raff?
For what? Yeah, for Riff Raff. Isaac, if you're listening to this, please do a video for Riff Raff. Please.
Please.
But yeah, I like this video a lot. I think this is, you know, it's so tough when you're huge, when you have a huge song like Take Me to Church. It's so tough to take another step and figure out what that is. And I really like,
yeah, so like even establish yourself as an artist.
Yeah, and this is a great, because I feel the performance videos can be so tedious and so boring, and Isaac does a great job of like allowing him to perform, but also cutting that with what is super hot in music videos right now, which is dance.
Yeah, and I think it's a really, like, the dance in this video seems a lot more intimate, I would say, and not in like a way where it's like, this is intimate, sexy dance. Like, it's like intimate in a way where, like, I feel like all the people dancing with each other all like love each other, you know, like one another, like the individual partners like actually have a connection to each other. Mm-hmm. And then you feel that in the video. I feel like that's so hard to capture. Yeah, right. And I do believe that there's like, I was talking to Isaac a little bit about this video, and I think that it kind of like spawned from there's like a main couple who is kind of the focus of it all. And I think the two of them choreographed this dance to this video and sent it to Hozier and kind of was just like, here, we did this, check this out. And he like responded to them and they were like, we'd love to like make a video. And I think they then reached out to Isaac, the two dancers. And I feel like that's how this video came together.
And they were Jillian Myers and Jack McKenzie.
Right, who are the two dancers and the two, because the concept, Jillian Myers is also credited as for the concept with Isaac. So I think they sent Hozier the video of them doing just like the dance, and that's kind of how the impetus of this video came together. So I do think that there is like the two dancers obviously do actually know each other, but even that's the case, like, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to feel it in the video when you watch it, but you do hear, like, and with everyone across the board, like, it just, there's a connection between the dancers. Mm-hmm. And even though the dancers aren't really like interacting with Hozier, like, there seems to be kind of a connection between the performance and the dancers as well. Like, it's so hard. The last Hozier video, he's performing in it, and the video, like, the narrative of the video and the performance just seem so separate of one another. But in this video, they're together and they kind of like mix together really beautifully.
Another nice touch of this video is that the couples are dancing kind of in a crowd of other singles, I guess.
singles.
Yeah, like all the couples. The couples are like, yeah, we're going to do this choreographed dance. And the people who are singles are just like, yeah, I guess I'll just stand over here. Right. Which sounds awkward, but it turns out to be nice.
They're all swiping Tinder. We just can't see that.
Yeah.
They're looking for the Jason DeLaro video.
Derulo. Yeah.
I don't care.
Adam, you didn't get matched with Jason Derulo.
No.
You got him served up, you swiped right, and it wasn't a match?
Yeah, no, there was no like no date and not even a music video. Nothing.
I love this video, man. It's so nice. Sorry, I'm just watching it again. It's a really great song too.
It's kind of unfortunate that it was released on the day that it was released. I feel like it might have gotten overshadowed a little bit. On another day, it probably would have stood out more.
Yeah, I wonder if like we might be like too much in the music video woods, where we're paying attention, where every music video comes out and it's like so interesting, meaningful to us. But like, you know, I think Hozier exists in different pockets than a lot of the artists who came out with videos that they did. But it is interesting that it's like not performing at a super high level yet.
Right.
I mean, it's close. I mean, it's 750K for 3 days, which is not
bad. Yeah, but
how
many views does Take Me to Church have?
Yeah, but Take Me to Church was a sleeper hit too. I mean, it's super tough to be, and I sympathize with these artists a lot, because when you have something that takes off like that song took off, I know there's a ton of promotion behind it, but I think relatively unexpectedly, a follow-up to that is almost impossible. So I think that you kind of even want it to not be as huge because it sets a precedent like, oh, everything is going to be a massive success by this guy.
Yeah, totally. No, right.
So I think he hits the exact right note he needs to hit here.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Because this is going to do a few million in the next month or so. It's going to do healthy numbers, I feel like. And it's going to probably chart. It's a great song. It'll probably chart relatively high. And I think that's where he needs to be for this. Because you have, like, you know, like, success can kind of be tough in music. I mean, directors and other people that work with music videos kind of have the luxury of working with anybody they want and kind of jumping around to different styles, but it is like if you're like someone like Adele who had the biggest selling album of 2012 and 2013, you know, having a mega hit like that, like what are you gonna do for your next album? Like how do you possibly like where do you even start?
It's all yodeling.
Every time I think of that, I think of the famous behind the scenes documentary of the Star Wars prequels that start with George Lucas sitting in his taking his daughter to school sometime in like 1993 and sitting down in his home office with like a blank piece of paper to write the Star Wars prequels. And like, what do you like if you're just sitting there? Like, what the fuck do you start writing?
Where do we fucking start?
Yeah,
it's like okay, Yoda.
And we all know how that turned out, but it's like that is the classic dilemma of success. This like idea of sitting in an office surrounded by your millions of dollars and these classic things that you've created, trying to do that again and having the whole world waiting for it. It just seems impossible.
Right, right, definitely. And so you have to like go to a place that like is like that connects to you as an artist. I think that definitely makes a lot of sense. So for him to like have these dancers who were moved by his music enough to like choreograph a dance to it and then make a music video out of that, mm-hmm. like that does seem like the perfect place to go. And if you still want to like be like, yeah, do something that makes any sense.
I still like Isaac's 303 videos. I don't know why, but I was watching some of them the other day. They're still really good. Like, if you watch...
Right.
I think this is a song that might have been, no offense to 303, but forgotten to time now. But 2010's My First Kiss featuring Kesha.
Right. Which is massive.
Yeah. Great song that I don't think has been kept in the rotation, but a great video.
Right. So much. It's such a good video. Michael Q. Schmidt. Wait, no, he's not in that one. He's in
a different. He's in... is he in a 303 video?
He is. He's in one of Isaac's.
He's in Touching on My. Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
He's the naked cook. Michael has quite a IMDb profile with 42 appearances, so.
And he's got a couple unread messages in my LinkedIn inbox.
Messages or... I get endorsed by Michael a lot.
Do you know? He just messaged me. I gotta write him back.
Okay. So, I think we did it, you guys. I think we...
Great job.
Adam, Doug, excellent job.
Thanks, Adam.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Adam. So, and I guess we'll talk about this new... British attempt at making a music video.
Yeah, we'll wait till there's more videos rated 18 to get into that.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll see you guys next week and keep on rocking. That's all I got.